I'm not a sculptor. I'm not a painter. I'm just someone. I try to be an artist who has a concept, an activity that deals with art and question the nature of art.
Sagt Bernard Venet, der vor 80 Jahren in Frankreich geborene Künstler, den ich für unseren Podcast Was macht die Kunst getroffen habe, um mit ihm über Tanz und Bewegung zu sprechen. Gerade wurde seine bislang größte Retrospektive in der neu eröffneten Kunsthalle Berlin im ehemaligen Flughafen Tempelhof eröffnet, die in zwei Hangars monumentale Arbeiten seines Schaffens aus 60 Jahren vereint. I'm delighted to meet you today in Berlin, Bernard Venet. And as always in this podcast, I'm wondering, how is your art doing these days?
My art is pretty healthy, I will say. You know, I have so many years of work behind, and today, having the opportunity to exhibit my works in prestigious place, in big places, and also my production, let's call it like this, my creation, is going pretty well. In fact, just I can tell you now is that, you know, all my work exhibited now at Tempelhof is from 61 to 2021. But in June, I will have another exhibition in Berlin at the König Gallery, where I will show works that nobody ever saw.
Wow.
So, but totally, totally different, new, extremely fresh. I mean, you will see. So the work is going well. Thank you.
You started very early as an artist. Do you remember what pushed you into artistic production in the first place?
Oh, it's a very simple story. It could take 2 hours if I tell you everything. But let's say that when I was a kid, I was a very sick kid. I had asthma. I had problems with my lungs. And I was not going to school regularly. So in school, I was not the best, far from that thing. And then I was not good to do gymnastic. I was not good looking, so the girls were not looking at me. So everything was wrong. Except that one day I discovered, because my teacher asked me to make a drawing, like he asked to everybody, but he saw my drawing and he admired the drawing. And he said to me, did you do that? And I said, yes. He says, oh, can you make another one bigger? We're going to put it on the wall. That day, I realized that I had something where I could be different and perhaps appreciated by people. So I made drawings and I made paintings. At the age of 11, I was already making oil paintings that I was selling to everybody in my village. Everybody wanted to buy my work. Just as a joke, they thought I would be famous one day, you know. So they can, I mean, you know, that's how people are. Anyway, at the age of 14, I already had an exhibition of my work. At the age of 19, another one. But the big shock, if you want to know how this happened, and this is a very important moment in my life, is the day that I went with my mother to the city of Digne, which is like the big city in the department, you know, and to buy some paint. And when we got there, we got to that shop, and my mother was paying the few tubes, but we were very, very poor. So I had five tubes, four perhaps, you know. She was at the cashier paying. I went back again in the street and looked at the window because I was surprised. There was a small book, you know. And there was definitely a painting reproduced on it, but on top of it, there was a word that I could not understand. It was written Renoir. And the word art was never pronounced in my family. I mean, Van Gogh, Renoir, Cézanne, Picasso. No, nobody knew about those names, to tell you, you know, the context from which I was coming. And so I went to ask the man of the shop and I said, excuse me, but what means that? You know, this is a painting, right? But what means Renoir? He says, Renoir? But Renoir is a very famous artist. He's in all the museums in the world. His paintings are selling for a lot of money. He has plenty of books, and he takes a book on the shelf, and he said, look, this is Renoir. He's an impressionist. That didn't mean much to me. And suddenly that day, I realized that I could be an artist. You see, you have to know that my grandfather, my mother, my father, all my brothers, all my cousins, all my friends from school, they were all going to the factory. There was a factory in that village and everybody was working there. And I was, of course, going to work there. So suddenly I saw an issue to get somewhere else. And this is the beginning of the story.
When you painted as a teenager. What was it that you brought to the canvas?
Oh, when I was a teenager, I was just copying. You see, the day I discovered that book of Renoir, my mother bought the book. And then, like, if 3 weeks later, we came back again to buy more paint, I would buy Cézanne or Utrillo, because it was easy at my age, 11 and 12, to understand Utrillo. And when I was seeing Cézanne, I was so surprised. You know, I thought, how can someone paint and change the configuration of a face, of a body? And this is what was interesting me. You see, some people would just admire the fact that it's very well done. No, what I admired was the freedom that the artist was introducing in his work. That aspect of creation was what was interesting to me. And so each time I was discovering an artist who was doing things even more modern, I was like jumping on it until Paul Klee. Paul Klee was the last artist that I looked at and who influenced me, and I made a whole production of work influenced by Paul Klee, but finding my own way, of course. And then at the age of 19, I stopped with all that, and I had a big knowledge about what was going on in the art world. And at that moment, I started to do the paintings that you see in the exhibition, discovering, you know, the interest of the black. That picture of the black tar, you know, running from the cliff like this, that was a big shock to me. That day, I had a big impulse.
So it's a natural phenomenon that the tar is coming out of nature there.
Oh, it's a truck that just
dropped it.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, the truck was not there anymore, but I'm sure that the day before a truck came and just like poured the tar, just like in Robert Smithson's piece. But except that Smithson ordered the piece to be made. Me, I just came and I saw that and I thought, oh my God, something is happening. And immediately, this was the influence on all my work: gravity, black. The natural aspect of life is now in my work. Yeah.
So it was industrial waste, basically, that was poured into nature.
Exactly.
And you saw the texture and this.
Yeah.
It must have smelled. I mean, I can imagine it smelled like whatever.
Perhaps it was not smelling anymore, because the smell of tar, it's funny, goes away relatively fast, yes.
Okay,
yes, otherwise, you know, when we make a street, we will feel it. But on the moment, yes, but it's probably 1, 2, or 3 days before. So that was not the thing. It was really that liquid, shining, black, intense, very, you know, but also the fact of gravity. You have to know that in those days, I was already interested in black to make my paintings, already. But I did not want to make paintings like Soulages. So I was looking for other issues. And suddenly seeing gravity creating that, I put it immediately in my cardboard paintings and in the paintings where I use tar without necessarily using gravity all the time.
So how do you physically work with tar? I mean, I can imagine you go to a paint shop and you buy tubes of paint, but where do you buy tar? And how do you have to heat it to make it liquid?
No, you can buy it relatively liquid. I was going to what we call les ponts et chaussées, you know, those places where they produce the thing and they give it to those people who are making roads, you know. So I was going to them and say, can you please give me, recipient full of, and they were giving it to me. I was bringing that to my studio, or at the very beginning, I was bringing it back to the army, because the first painting were done at the time of the army, and I was making my paintings. Now, there were two ways to do it. The most, during the time of the army, I didn't have the money to buy canvases, so I was buying pieces of paper, you know, 1 meter by 75 about, putting them on the floor, pouring the tar on it, and with my feet, in order not to make a composition like Mr. Soulages, which was very controlled, you know, its gesture was really calculated. I did the contrary. I painted with my feet spontaneously. I could not know the result that I was going to get. So I liked that. I liked the fact that it was, each time I had a surprise. And this is how I started to use the tar.
It's a bit hard to imagine. You were a teenager. You were still a teenager at that time.
I was 19. Yeah.
19. You were a soldier because military was mandatory at the time, and you had space to work as an artist while training for the military. It's a very curious image?
I was in Tarascon because I was exempt from arms, from all kind of things, you know, corvée, I don't know how we say that in English, because I had been sick when I was a kid. So I was not supposed to be a soldier with a gun. Let's make it like this. So I was like a secretary. And when I arrived in Tarascon, I realized that there were some lofts on top of a building which were totally empty. When I saw that, I thought, oh my God, if I could make a studio. So I went to ask the caporal, the adjutant, the captain, and the colonel, and I one after the other, you know, and I explained that it would be great if I could do a painting because I had a contract with a gallery in Paris, which of course was not true, but it was a way for me to impose myself. And I gave a course on modern art to the colonel, explaining that it was possible to paint with my feet. He thought it was totally insane. And finally, he said, okay, look, you take it, okay, do what you want, but I will come and check, okay? Don't be stupid, okay? Yeah. So I got my studio. And I did only that, almost, yeah.
Wonderful. It's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Now, the military is behind you. You also started a ballet in your early years. Can you say something about that?
That's much later. That's after the period of... it's during the period of conceptual art that... Well, you have to know that when I was 17 and 18, I was working in Nice at the opera. I was helping the chief decorator to make huge sets, you know, and big paintings that will go on, you know, with the illusion that there was a building or something. So I learned how to paint like this and to work on very large scale. And of course, since I was working there, they took me a few times to the opera to see some pieces, to see how our decors were functioning. And I saw two or three ballets. And I remember thinking, my God, it's so classical, it's so boring, you know. One day I will show them what we can do with dance, you know. And then I forgot until the day that when, in 1966, I started to make my mathematical diagrams, I thought, oh, it would be interesting. I started to visualize this ballet that would be danced on a vertical plan, on a grid, okay, in metal, on which dancers could move and attach to a rope that will follow them on that grid. They will create some diagrams. I thought, oh, it would be great, you know. And I tried to do it in New York in 1968, and they said, okay, they are going to do it at the famous Judson Church Theater, which is a legendary place where Rauschenberg, Robert Morris, Karoly Schneemann, all those people made performances there. And I was invited by the director to do that ballet, but I didn't have the money. And at the end, I did something else. But the ballet I did, yes, in Paris in January 1988.
You had the idea in your 20s and you realized it in your...
Yeah, 20 years later, 22 years later. But you know, this ballet, you have to know that I did, of course, the sets and the costumes. For an artist, it's very normal, for a visual artist. But I did the choreography completely and I did all the music. The music was played by the National Orchestra in Paris. It was my music. And we played it for 1 week because that was supposed to last 1 week.
You are a man of very many talents.
I don't know if I'm very talented, but I try everything.
In 1979, you discovered the third dimension for your works. Can you tell me about this key moment for your later works that we are most familiar with today?
In 77, 78, I was making paintings and reliefs, which were using lines as a subject matter, and arcs mainly in those days, only arcs. Well, actually paintings with angles also. And one day I thought, oh, it would be nice to make an arc in steel and to see how it works with another one, and let's see if I can make a sculpture. And I just made some small sculptures, big like this, you know, 30, 40 centimeters tall. Without too much ambition, I didn't know where I was going from that. You know, when you start something, you don't know where it's going to take you. But what was the big, well, if you want to talk about the experience of the physicality of my work, yes, of course, this is the beginning. But it took a while before it became, before I decided to really get into sculptures. It only happened when I started to make the indeterminate lines. You know, I was making indeterminate lines in wood in 83. Which were where the line was overlapping like this, and so they were coming out of a wall. And one day I thought, "How? Oh, what about getting into space?" You know, you have to know that my obsession in my life and in my work is that is to constantly push the limits of what I have been doing. I'm bored very quickly with what I do. I must change immediately. You know, I mean, I do something for 1 year and then I want to go to something else. I can sometimes come back and look back. Because suddenly everything that I did recently is opening a door to something that I did a long time ago. And suddenly, boom, I go on and I just develop that. So that was indeterminate lines in wood were coming out of a wall, as I told you. And one day I thought, how about going in space? So I went. I was living in New York on Canal Street. And I went to a shop where I found a piece, a stick of aluminium like this. I took four or five. I bring them back to my studio and I just make a little twist like this, you know, doodle, let's say. I put them on the table and I'm thinking, my God, if I could do that in big, it would be totally original. It could be interesting. And then, so the year after, I started to make them a little bigger. And later, I found solution to make them big. And this is when... This is when everything started again for me, because I went through several periods, you know, let's say my success, relative success. But in 1970, I was like doing very well because I had a big show in Germany at the museum in Krefeld. And then I had a big show, a retrospective exhibition at the age of 30 in New York with 180 work. I mean, it was serious, a big, big thing at the New York Cultural Center in those days. And these were moments when things were going well. But then since I stopped temporarily doing art, everything went down, you know, the traversée du désert, the crossing of a desert, we call it, and everything is very tough. But then it started again with those indeterminate lines that I created in 1985. One of them actually is exhibited here, and it's probably the very first one I made.
Where and why did you stop your artistic production for a couple of years?
Well, we passed the period together of conceptual art. You see, I worked in 1966. I started to use language as to replace the visual aspect of art in general, the formal aspect. Artists are making paintings, so there is color, there is shape, there is sometimes a relationship with something outside, like they paint a landscape, for example. And me, I just wanted to go somewhere else. And like that, it happened in a very natural way, but always with this idea of saying, why not? Why not? Why not this? And when I was thinking about something that had nothing to do with art, but why not? I had a sort of intuition that something was possible. And even if I make a mistake, I make a mistake, but I prefer to go on a path where nobody goes rather than walking with everybody. I went to New York. I was 24, I told you. And suddenly I saw this exhibition at the Whitney Museum, an exhibition where a lot of artists from minimal art were exhibited. Carl André, Sol LeWitt, Judd, Flavin, you know, everybody was there, Smithson. And I saw that. And I saw immediately the relationship that there was between those artists and me, because they were also doing abstract art and they were doing industrial product, where you have to know that in France, why did I leave France? Because nobody understood what I was doing. Everybody thought I was like, you know, dépassé, like obsolete. Why? Because starting 1961, we have to understand the context. Pop art is coming. It's the revolution. And the new realists in France are coming. So the pop, they paint. The new realists, they use object. And then there are other movements always related to a return to figuration. Everybody, all the artists of my generation, they went into that. They stopped doing abstract like in the 50s and they started to do pop art. And me, I stay with geometrical abstraction. So nobody was interested. They just thought Vene is like, okay, we'll see. But when I saw what I call my cousins, you know, those artists in New York, then I felt very confident that I was in the right direction. But they were better than me because they were colder than me. They were more industrial than me. They were really making a drawing, and in the factory, everything was being produced. Where me, I was still making the thing with my cardboard. And even if the composition was very minimal, even if I was painting with industrial painting, well, no, they were much better than me. So what I did immediately is the tubes, the yellow tubes that you saw, which are interesting because they respect also the laws of gravity. You see, the tubes takes this position because it's cut in biseau, I don't know how to say, in angle like this. So there is more weight on one side, and gravity is giving the composition, the position of the work. So I did that thinking, ah, yes, I was making industrial painting. Now I'm doing an industrial product. I was calling that. It's a product, you know, it's not even a sculpture. And one day I was invited in France by a museum for an exhibition of 20, 30 artists from Europe. And they asked me, they said, Bernard, you show us the most far out thing that you did. And I said, well, what I'm doing now is some tubes, but I don't have the money to make them big. And they said, ah, what can you do? And suddenly I thought, okay, I'm going to make a drawing, a big drawing of the tube, but like an industrial designer, you know, seen from the top, from the side, you know, you see how it looks like with dimensions and everything, very clean. And I thought, I'm going to show that because this is like, yeah, very original. And if they want to make the tube, they make the tube, I give it to them. But when I finished the drawing of this tube, I looked at it, I sat down and I looked at it and I looked at it and I started to think that perhaps the drawing of the tube was more interesting than the tube itself. The information about an object became for me more interesting than the object itself. All everybody was making object, but making information about an object, that was interesting. So immediately, because I had a brother who was an industrial designer, I went to steal from him some books on industrial design, and I started to make paintings, which are exhibited here, of industrial design. Very cold, you know, black, just a marker on white canvas. I make a few, and then one day I'm thinking, because again, you know, I have to go beyond, I'm thinking there is one thing I should do, which would go much further. It's a pure mathematical diagram. So I make one. You know, I have the idea, I make it immediately. So I make a mathematical diagram. I make two. And I sit down in front of it and I'm thinking, you know, who is going to accept that? You have no idea. In 66, a pure mathematical diagram. Today we don't accept it. Nobody wants to put that in the apartment. Nobody. Nobody. Only museums have pieces like this. But I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, what is interesting about that mathematical diagram is that it has nothing to do anymore with figurative art. And it has nothing to do with abstract art. It doesn't look like a Rothko, a Kandinsky, a de Kooning, or whatever. And my God, if I can impose that in the art world, I mean, it would be a revolution. You know, it would be really something that was never thought before. So I kept on working like this, and I developed, you know, back to New York then, again, at the end of 66, I developed my work using scientific information and mathematical things like this. And this is how everything evolved. But to answer your question, now that I said all that, my work became extremely rational, meaning that, you see, showing a mathematical diagram, I'm not expressing myself. It has very little to do with a Van Gogh self-portrait. You know what I mean? It's like, cannot be more the opposite. But I knew that it was a direction that was totally unknown, unexplored, and so I could do something. And I went to the limits. I went to the, you know, for example, in Chicago, I was invited to an exhibition called Art by Telephone. And they said, Bernard, okay, what could you send us? I said, okay. I called Columbia University, Jack Ullman. He was a scientist. I called him up. I said, Jack, can you find for me a subject, you know, 3, 4, 5 pages, you know, of a subject within its field, which is very interesting, like radical, new, which is making a revolution in science. And but don't try to put some beautiful images, okay? If it's only text, it's only text. I don't care, okay? And Jack Ullman found a text with 4 pages And I said, okay, I don't want to see it. Send it to the museum. He sent the images to the museum by internet, I don't know what. There, they made some blow-ups. They exhibit the work, and I don't even go to see it. Just to show you how. You see, but this was the distance. I am totally the opposite of a German artist, you know, which are expressionist, which I love a lot, okay? Let's not misunderstand what I'm saying, but I'm completely the opposite. I'm typical French, completely, uniquely intellectual, rational, trying to do something that has a logic, you know? And me, I don't count. I am nobody. I am nothing. I am a little bit like a mathematician who is not putting his personality in his calculation. No, he's just doing a logical work that will take him to something which is perhaps interesting.
The way you take yourself out of this reminds me of Marcel Duchamp, also yes. A Frenchman.
Well, I knew him. No, don't ask me to tell you the story because this will be something in itself, okay? And I did it the other day with Koenig. I knew Marcel Duchamp. I spent 5 hours with him. He made a piece on me. He signed me something. I was explaining to him that my work was very rational, and that I even made pieces which are totally non-visual. There is nothing to see. You just listen to a lecture by a scientist. When I said that to him, he said, but vous vendez du vent. Okay, it's a French expression that says, so you are selling wind, meaning you are doing something that, you know, is without interest. Normally in French, when you say to someone, but you vend du vent, you know, he's selling nothing, you know, or he deals with nothing. But he said that with a smile. And I said, what do you mean? And he took his pen, and he had his newspaper in front of him, and he wrote, la vente de vin est l'event de venez. Now, it means the sale of wind is the event of venez. Now, you have four words which are using the letters of my name, and he improvised that just like this, in 2 seconds.
Wow. I want to go back to physicality and performance. What do these mean for understanding your work? I know that there is a performance also going on in Tempelhof. Mm-hmm. It's planned for the opening.
Three of them.
So maybe you can say a little bit about that.
Well, why performance to start with? Okay, my work, I'm not a sculptor. I'm not a painter. I'm just someone. I try to be an artist who has a concept, an activity that deals with art and question the nature of art. That what I just said now is very precise. Now, in order to do that, I have my own ideas about art. I have my own way of moving and so on. And as when I say I'm not a sculptor, it's because I like to explore several disciplines which are going to be explored because of the context that interests me. So when, in 1963, when you enter the room that we have here at Tempelhof, what do you see? You see tar paintings. Okay, I'm not going to analyze that, but you see also a charcoal pile. Then you see also a black mirror. Then you see a book which is black. Then you see photography, which are photography of the gravel and the tar of the street, okay? You see, all that is related. But you see, you have, I will say, literature, even if a book is completely black. The book is only talking about itself, you know? There is nothing else but the physicality of the work. Now, you have also those black tar paintings. It's all related. The black tar paintings are exactly the same thing as the sculpture. It's of the same nature. Here, it's more obvious because everything is black. But I can also do things, performances which are immediately related. Also, even if they don't look visually to my work. But so, doing performances, which is I made one in those days. You saw that image, those three images of me laying down on the floor with the garbage around me. That was directly related to the paintings I was doing. I was doing what I call déchets, meaning refuse, you know, like things that you throw in the garbage, okay, that junk stuff. And I was doing that as paintings. Then I thought one day that it would be interesting to do it as a performance. So I put myself in those refuse, garbage, and so on, to me, it was the same thing, but it was a way to extend my activity. You see, the man that influenced me most, although everything I did was the contrary of what he was doing, it was Yves Klein. Yves Klein, what I liked about him, I liked everything, but I was against the transcendental was yes. there, you know, it was me, it's the matter, it's the reality, it's the physicality of the thing. I'm completely the opposite. And when I saw that Yves Klein was not just a painter, he was also making, giving a lecture was a work of art for him. Making music was a work of art. Making performances like jumping like this and, you know, the artist in space was also an artwork. So he did several things that turned around this concept, the Yves Klein concept, but he was extending, just like going beyond the yeah. nature of art. And this was important. So that's why I also made music in those days. But my music, what was it? Oh, it was a sound piece. You cannot call that music. But I took this wheelbarrow that you saw today. I put a tape recorder on it. And I just started walking around with a wheelbarrow. And you have that for 10 minutes. And this is my piece. But what is interesting about it, just to analyze that, if you want, you know, a very historical piece of Robert Morris is that box that he made in which he put a tape recorder, a tape, which is the sound of the making of the box. That was in 1961, very early. But you see the relationship with me, it was also 1961, of making a sound piece which is the natural result of a process that you are experiencing. You see, this is what interests me. You know, it's something which has content, something that in the future, and pardon, it sounds pretentious, but I hope that some art historian will analyze, we already do. But anyway, I'm not talking about making art to decorate apartments. I mean, I'm not about that, you know. I don't want people to come and say, oh, this one is so beautiful, I love this painting. I don't care about that. I want to make art that has meaning and that will create, you know, new ways of thinking about art in the future or today, yeah.
Today, while you were still installing the show in Tempelhof, I saw these arcs that are so monumental. They look like the rib cage of a whale or something. Mm. But would I be spoiling a surprise? What will happen during the performance with these arcs?
Yes, well, they are just installed in a stable state. I insist on that, in a stable state. They are there and they are ready to pass to another state. This other state will happen at 7:30 on the 28th this month, when I will come with a forklift. The forklift will have a long bar like this, you know, like that will, and I will, that will be attached to it, a horizontal bar, and I will come close to the arcs, and then suddenly, boom, I bump into one, which is going to bump into the other, and with the domino effect, we'll put everything on the floor in the most amazing sound noise that you will never experience somewhere else. And it's a performance that lasts 3 seconds, but I tell you, you will remember it all your life. Yeah, it's I did it only once until now. I did it in Le Muy last summer. I tell you, people who saw it, they remember it.
So chance will be part of the artwork because you don't know exactly how they will they will fall to the floor.
I know that there are limits, otherwise I would not do it. You know, if they just run into the public. No. I know that the way I do it, they are going to fall, you know, like this in front of each other. But I presented them in a certain way, and also the arcs are not all the same, so there will be some sort of disorder that at the end creates something interesting.
If time travel was real, what place and period would you visit?
The future. The future, because I'm curious to know what is going to happen to art and to the world. And even if it's not always fun for regular life of everybody, but I'm so curious to know what will happen in the future.
Okay. Yeah. What's your most important tool?
Tool, huh? My brain. Ah. Definitely, yeah, it's the only one I use.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
I think I would be a bear because it's solid, it's really on the ground, and they know what they are doing.
Which game do you like to play?
I play absolutely. I never played a game when I was a kid. Never, never, never. I did art, and today I'm doing art. My game is real life.
What's your favorite color?
People could think that it's black. But the color that I prefer is the color of the beautiful eyes of a beautiful woman.
Do you have a recurring dream?
Yes, yes. I have a dream that comes back very often. I have three dreams that come back very often. But one of them related to what we are talking about today is that I dream that I am an artist, but I don't know what to do. I'm panicked. I just don't know what to do. While in real life, I just cannot produce what I'm thinking every day. So it's the contrary of the reality. It's always the contrary of reality. I'll tell you another dream. It's that when things are going very well financially for me, I dream that I have absolutely no money. And when people, if, for example, you have an opening and everybody thinks that I am okay, you know, that I'm good, okay, the day after I can dream that I have absolutely no success, that I am in school and my teacher is saying, Bernard, you are so bad. And yeah, it's funny. It's always like, it's like a compensation, you know.
Do you listen to music while you work?
Never. Never. I don't listen to music. It disturbs me terribly, yeah.
Which topic would you like to see an entire issue of Weltkunst?
First, I thought it would be interesting to analyze the year 1910, 1920, 1960, 1970, because I think that these are the two period decades where we had like such an inventive moments. But really today, after thinking about it, I would like to see about the art of the younger generation. Just like that, I would learn something, really, yeah, instead of just thinking that I already know about all that, yes. You know, NFT and generative art and so on, because something is going to come out, for sure, is coming out and will come out even more.
Can you share a wisdom?
Rien ne m'importe qui n'importe qu'à moi. It means nothing matters if it matters only to me. Only the things that matter to others are things that I care about, yes.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I like this sentence a lot, yes. Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to you.
It was a great honor and pleasure to meet you. And thank you for taking the time.
A pleasure also for me. I love to communicate, so thank you for inviting me.
Weltkunst, was macht die Kunst, is brought to you in association with Christie's. The highly anticipated 20th, 21st century art auction series returns to Christie's, bringing together masterworks by modern and contemporary icons. This edition will open on March 1st with an extraordinary lineup across the globe, starting with the evening sale in Shanghai. Headlined by a captivating Basquiat, this will be swiftly followed by the evening sale in London, featuring works by Renoir, Bridget Riley, David Hockney, Banksy, and more. This exciting day will conclude with the Art of the Surreal auction in London, led by masterpieces by Magritte and Picasso. A relay livestream event will capture the excitement of these three sales, fielding in bids from Christie's four major sale sites from Shanghai to Hong Kong, London, and New York. The saga will continue with the Post-War and Contemporary Art Day Sale on March 2nd and the Impressionist Day and Works on Paper Sale on March 4th, complemented by the first open Post-War and Contemporary Art online auction with bidding opening 23rd February through 9th March. Discover all this and more at Christie's.com.